Okay, here's our first question. Is there significance to the choice of wording in verse 25 for a time, times, and half a time?
Yeah, thank you. You get that phrase in Revelation as well. A time, a year, times, double that, 2 years, half a time, half that, half a year. I think if my math is right, that's 3.5 years. That's probably right, because sometimes it's mentioned in terms of 42 months. Sometimes it's 1,200 something days, which is 3.5 years. Same period mentioned in all three of those ways in the book of Revelation. It seems to be a way of saying, with seven being a number of completion, it's kind of half that. It's a definite period of time that will end, but it's not a kind of complete or good time, as it were. So as opposed to seven, which would be a number of goodness and completion. So it's the period of time that sort of tribulation stuff is going to go on for.
And we've seen, obviously, in Daniel that sometimes people get rescued. Sometimes, like today, some people don't. Why is that? Why some people are not others?
Yeah, I don't know, basically. Shall I say more? That's what Daniel tees us up for so helpfully, doesn't it? So we do see that God's still active in the world as the rescuer of Daniel and his friends, but we're also prepared for what's perhaps the more normal thing, that people don't get rescued. Jesus didn't get rescued, you know, and you know, are we glad that Jesus didn't get rescued from the cross? Well, in the very big picture, yeah, because of what God was achieving there. We don't know what God's achieving through individual martyrdoms and the horrors of what Christians in North Korea are going through today, but we can trust him that he is still at work for good.
This is a sort of a Bible handling one. It can be hard reading prophecy like this because it leaves you asking, did it come true? I find this reading Isaiah 2. Any tips for us non-experts on how to approach chapters like this?
Yeah, I think the main thing is keep reading them within the book that they're in. So that's why I was trying to strongly encourage us to read this vision in light of what's gone before in chapters 1 to 6 and the more historical named countries details that we'll get in chapter 8 onwards. It's very unlikely that Daniel 7 doesn't relate to the stuff that's gone before and after in the book. So in terms of Bible handling, hold your nerve with your main Bible handling tool, which is your context tool.
I think you said a bit about this already in your sermon, Kev, but our situation feels so different to the book of Daniel, as in we're not under an oppressive ruler now. So how should we apply this to us?
Well, thank the Lord. Thank the Lord for the relative peace and calm that we've enjoyed. Thank the Lord for the civilizing influence of Christianity that has led to us having a more peaceful and just society. And I guess expect that it's not always the norm. As I say, it can get beastly quite quickly, actually, when you say no to the cultural values and direction that everyone around you is going in. It can actually, at more local level, get a bit beastly, and we mustn't be surprised about that, would be the message of Daniel for us.
Some people see the four beasts as the four empires following Daniel's time, so Babylon, Persia, Greek, Roman. Can you say more about why you think it's a broader view of the whole of history?
Yeah, so I think it's a both and. So particularly when you pair it up with chapter 2, it does look like there's a outworking of the four beasts in those four empires that come before the time of Jesus. I'm partly saying bigger because the timeline of the vision is bigger, beginning with that creation swirling out of the waters and ending at the day the books are opened. It seems like the beasts carry on wreaking havoc till then. So it's both and, I think.
Do you think everything in Daniel 1 to 6 really did happen?
Yeah, well, I think we can take from Jesus. Jesus quotes the prophet Daniel as a historical figure, so that's good enough for me.
How important is it now in Daniel to understand the visions as opposed to the interpretation? So is there any danger in missing the point by trying too hard to understand the visions themselves?
Well, I think what's so helpful is, as I said, the Q&A began in the chapter, didn't it? As Daniel receives not just a vision picture, but voices that explain it. So you need to be controlled in your where you go with the vision by the voices around it that are saying what it means. That's a general point about apocalyptic literature.
Just two more questions. Is the fourth beast the Antichrist that will appear in the end times? What do we know about it?
It might be. Some people think the little horn is a sort of man of lawlessness, 2 Thessalonians. We're going to look at 2 Thessalonians in June, so let's see what we think about that then. It may be that there's a particularly intense manifestation of lawlessness right before the end, but sadly it's clear that we should expect this kind of violent conquest, and particularly against the people of God. That's a factor of the whole of history. Jesus, in his own apocalyptic chapter, Matthew 24, tells us to expect that.
I think we'll end with this one. What have you found personally encouraging from Daniel as you prepare?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. Well, to be perfectly honest, the vision stuff isn't kind of my natural thing. It's very big picture. It's hard to latch on to. What I've loved about the book of Daniel is you get the truths asserted in the visions about God's rule, but you also get it played out in history to persuade you that he really does rule. And then even closer to home, you get Daniel and his mates modeling to us what it looks like to live in light of God's rule. So I think I've just been emboldened by the way they've brought through the big picture truths to saying no and saying yes when they needed to. And it's really emboldened me to want to keep doing that too.